up. This is Caroline with the CWC podcast, where we believe that life without your favorite foods is not worth living. I'm going to be talking a lot about my journey to food freedom, and of course, I will always keep it real by sharing the good, the bad, and of course, the ugly.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yay. Yes, I can.
Yay. Awesome. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired. It's chilly here today.
Me too. I'm tired. It's rainy, so.
Yeah. We've got baseball later tonight. We had softball and baseball last night, softball and baseball tomorrow, and the weather's just shit. So
they're going to be muddy.
Always. And they're both catchers. So yes, definitely muddy.
Oh, like covered in mud.
Yes, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so number one, I'm just like really excited to have you on and have you share everything about your process. I know, like, I just feel like, I mean, I already know everything, but I am excited for you to share with everybody what it has been like before you started. I kind of want you to just go through what you were feeling before you signed up, how you found me, which I think I know how you found me, but I want you to kind of tell the story of how you came upon CWC and then your journey and where we are today.
Sure. I can do that. Yeah. You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. All right. Let's roll. I'm going to start by introducing myself. My name is Molly Stofa. I am
the worst. I've done that my entire life. I like have the worst thing of not introducing people. So yeah. Oh my God. I actually did your introduction before I admitted you.
Okay.
So we'll just count that, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So my name is Molly Stofa. I'm a 46-year-old mom, wife, athlete, nurse, dog mom, kid mom, unfortunately a cat mom. You'll probably hear him meow. And just downright all around busy person. To start where I found CWC. So I have a friend, her name's Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Melnick. She's also a coworker of mine now. I worked with her many years ago when I worked in the ER. She was a tech when she was going through nursing school. Anyway, we're friends on Instagram and I was following her and she was tagging some chick by the name of Caroline Mathias in her Instagram stories and stuff. And I'm like, who is this? So me being the stalker I am, clicked on your name. And I started looking at your Instagram. And then I went down the rabbit hole of looking at your Facebook and stuff. I realized you did podcasts. And I honestly stalked you for probably a solid year. I would look at your post. I would look at your lives. I would just figure out your energy. And I really, really enjoyed the energy you were giving off. When I found you, I was in a really low point in my life. I had lost two parents. both of my parents in 3 years. I had just quit a very stressful and toxic job which is weird. I loved that job, but I didn't. And I had put on, from the time I started that job until I met you, I would say 50-ish pounds. Worked through a pandemic as a nurse. And mentally, physically, emotionally, I was just disgusted with myself. I just wasn't healthy. And I was out mowing on my riding mower one day, listening to your podcast. And I don't remember which podcast it was, but there was a point in there where you were talking about your father being bipolar and you had talked about being an empath and how taxing and consuming and mentally difficult that is. And you said the comment of, I always thought it was a gift until I learned it wasn't. And I literally stopped on the mower and my husband comes out and he's looking at me and I was just like, because it was me. I always thought being an empath was some tortured gift I had been given because I could feel the energy in the room, but I felt it was my fault. It was my job to control the energy in the room. Hence being a nurse. Then I'm like, all right, I got to dig into this girl a little bit more. And that's when I actually reached out to you. And it was that moment that I knew you were who I needed to complete healing myself and fixing myself from all of the things over the years that I have survived. And I'm going to say survived because we've all survived to this point, you know. Mm-hmm. When we first started talking, you were like, I'm going to need you to trust me. And I'm like, okay, but you're teaching things that I've never done before. Like I'm a former bodybuilder competitor. There was a time I was going to dabble in powerlifting. Like I actually trained for a long time with powerlifting, with heavy benching, deadlifting, squatting. But I didn't have the diet dialed in. And I use the word diet, because I was really, truly just trying to see how much I could lift at that point, trying to find some sort of outlet for making myself happy, for filling that void that was within myself that I couldn't find. And your program, CWC, was exactly what I needed in that moment to fill that void. And yeah, I had been doing some therapy because of some work things. That had also started like this journey of realizing like I was stuck and I needed to fix my life. So CWC with your big thing is give yourself grace when you're struggling, take the time, figure out what is going on and sit with yourself for a little bit and figure out why. Mm-hmm. That is the thing. And I've never done that. I had not sat with myself to figure it out before. I was just of the screw it. Just go. It doesn't matter. You're being weak. You're being a pussy. Fucking yep. Go, you know? And,
which is how our parents kind of raised a lot of us. I feel like that generation, like I literally saw a TikTok the other night, not to just launch back into TikTok, but I saw one where a guy was like, dude, I was raised in the 80s. I fell down and broke my foot at football practice. And my mom literally shoved my broken foot in my shoe and was like, I don't fucking have time for this. Get up. Like that's, I don't want to say that's exactly how we were raised, but we were like, we don't raise our kids like that.
My favorite, my saying that my dad would always say was, it's too far from your heart to kill you. And so, too far from your heart to kill you.
Ouch.
And the other thing, like the way I connected to you, you talked about being a soccer player and an athlete. And I played soccer from the time I was 5 until I was 19. And I had dreams and aspirations to go and play in college, but it didn't happen that way. Like life happened. It was probably, I would say that was the moment that I recognized I was an adult when I made the decision to walk away from the thing that had brought me comfort for
as a child.
As a child, it was my escape. My mom was bipolar for 26 years of my life. She didn't take medication. And it was a very tumultuous childhood. And I didn't realize it until I was older. I didn't realize that I had anxiety as a 5-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid. And that the empath part of me came from that tumultuous upbringing. But I'm not mad at my mom either, because she did the best she could with the faculties that she had. I also don't think that my parents recognized what they chose to do with their marriage affected myself and my sisters the way that it did. And now both of my parents are gone. My sisters and I have actually had great conversations about this, about how it affected the three of us very differently. You know, I was the youngest of three and quite a bit young. My middle sister was 9 years older. My oldest sister's 13 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of the times I was home alone with my mom for a long time. And I learned the defense mechanism of going to the radar, just coast,
keep do the everything. Peace.
Yep. Keep the peace, go under the radar, do what you can, just not to rock the boat. And soccer was the way that I got to be me. I got to let that out. And it was time, like my dad would come to my games and it was time with my dad where him and I were pretty close. We were for a long time. And then, when that went away, I struggled to find myself for quite some time to figure out where I fit in life, So that's yeah, there's that.
I feel like I wonder, you'd mentioned that your mom did not also take medication, and my dad doesn't take medication for his. And I, now that I'm an adult and just recently diagnosed with ADHD and my medication has literally changed my life, it makes me wonder if there wasn't such a stigma like there was back then, like, because now I'm like, why wouldn't you take it if it would help? Like, why would you not take a medication that is available to deal with a neurological disorder like that? You know, I mean, I obviously hindsight doesn't matter now, but
I think, you know, a lot of it was for my mom. I know it was her upbringing. Her mom was extremely young when my mother was born, and she was a vile person. She's a short little Italian lady that you don't mess with. Like, and my grandfather was an alcoholic. So a lot of it, and my mom was the reason they had to get married, because she was born in the '30s. My parents were old when they had me. They were my mom was 38. My dad was 40. And I do believe their generation, mental health was not a thing. They just, if you had an issue with mental health, you were weak. And with her bipolar, I think looking at it now, I believe it was, she didn't like how she felt on the medication because they didn't have a lot of options then. They didn't have what they have now. And being made fun of, being told all these things from her mother, from her family. I really think that's why. So she was trying to prove that she was better than that, and that really truly wasn't her. I do remember when I was 26, she was in the hospital for like 17 days for some physical ailments and years of not physically taking care of herself. And my dad made the comment to me, you have to tell your mother she has to stay on her medication, because I was able to talk to her physician and get her started on medication at that point. And my dad told me, he's like, you have to tell her she has to stay on it or she can't come home. And I'm like, what? I don't even live at home, right? What? Like, why do I do that, Dad? He listens. So I told her that. And I remember seeing, like, the looking in her eyes and the hate and the just the blackness in her at that point. Like, she just, it wasn't her. It wasn't truly there. It was her illness. Yeah. And I said, Mom, you have to keep on this medication. Fast forward 6 weeks later, her and I are shopping, something we never did. Like, I hated spending time with her because it was just hard.
Right.
And she was so different at that point. Like, she was fun. She was smiling. She was having a good time. And I asked her, I'm like, Mom, do you notice a difference when you're on your medication? And she said, yeah. And I said, I really like who you are on your medication. My mom never cried, and I looked at her and she had tears in her eyes. I don't think anyone had ever told her something that way. And I said, please stay on it because I really do enjoy spending time with you this way. So she stayed on it from that point on. And like, her personality was completely different, completely different. So, I mean, I do believe she did the best she could with what she had. It just was hard. And bipolar is a nasty disease. It's really, truly nasty.
It is. Me and my sister both, for years when we started therapy, which wasn't long ago, I can remember sitting at my therapist and she's like, tell me about yourself. And I was like, well, you know, I really didn't have, like, I had a really decent childhood. And she's like, okay, so tell me about your parents. Tell me about your relationship with them. And I just started talking, and she was like, you had a pretty traumatic childhood. And I was like, no, I didn't. Like, I know. And she was like, you did. And it was literally like someone, like, I did not believe it. It wasn't my reality. I had just justified everything because when you grow up with your family, we just grow up around the people we grow up with. We don't know what other people's lives are like. And so I just grew up thinking that was normal. And to have like a professional be like, living with someone who has bipolar disorder is extremely traumatic. And it was like, once she said that, it was like what you said, it like hit me. I was like, it really was. And it was like, all of a sudden, like, get goosebumps talking about it. all of a sudden I immediately was like, okay, Caroline, you're allowed to like admit that that was scary. You're allowed mm-hmm. to admit that day to day was fucking terrifying. Like I yeah. remember me and my sister being like, if he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed, like just yeah. don't go near him. And like when I started like processing all of that shit, I was like, oh my God, like that was a really scary way to grow up.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. When I first started seeing my therapist, like they do the typical, like you said, tell me about your childhood. And I told her about it and her mouth was like, and this is a therapist who specializes in those of us that are first responders, nurses, healthcare providers, all of that, because we're a just different, unique kind of breed. Mm-hmm. And her jaw was on the floor and she's like, holy shit. And I'm like, what? And she's like, that is, how are you standing upright? How are you able to function? That is so heavy to carry as a child. I acknowledge what you went through. And it was those words. I lost my shit. Like I cried. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I was speechless and I felt drained, but at the same point, it was such a weight off of my shoulders. It truly mm-hmm. was something that I was like, okay, there's a reason I'm so closed off to certain people. There's a reason I don't trust women right away. There's a reason I dove right into emergency to ER nursing right out of nursing school, because that chaos was comfort. It was all I knew, but it wasn't yes. comfort.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I literally, what you just said, I said that to my therapist when I had my first breakthrough, and I'll never forget it. I remember saying, I feel like, cause I catastrophize. And I just always was like, oh, it's because I'm OCD. And I was like, she said, why do you catastrophize? She gave me homework and said, write down, why do you do that? And so I started writing and I was like, this may sound weird, but I feel like when I'm catastrophizing, it like makes me feel safe. And I was like, that's bizarre. And she's like, no, that's how you grew up. Like, here's yeah. your first breakthrough. And I was like, oh my God, how mm-hmm. weird. Like I purposely mm-hmm. catastrophize, not purposely, but like, it's like a fucking weird defense mechanism. It's yeah. bizarre.
I used to call myself an adrenaline junkie, and what it was just all I knew. And so like the ER nursing, the chaos was just comforting, but it wasn't yeah. like looking back now, I'm really glad I had the opportunity to work in the ER and see the things I saw and all of that. But I'm so different than I am now. I could not go back to it. Like I couldn't.
Right. Cause and, you've done the work and you, mm-hmm. I feel like you have healed a lot of yourself. And once mm-hmm. you heal a lot of that, you can't go back to that because that's not your safety anymore. And you're right. like,
Right. Right. And you know, there's parts of it that I miss, but like growing up in that chaos, all like going through nursing school, all I could think of was like, I was tunnel vision of, I need to do ER nursing. I have to do it. And in that time, the show ER, I don't know if you ever watched it, was very big. Like I was a teenager, it was on and I watched every episode. Like I was addicted to that show. And I'm like, I need to do that. I need to do that. I need to do that. I thought it was because of that. It wasn't because of that. It really mm-hmm. wasn't. And then when I left ER nursing, I went into flight. I was a flight nurse for 5 years, and let me tell you, you see some shit with that and a lot of heavy things. And I remember the last 6 months, year to 6 months when I was done, I was trying to find a way to get out of it. And I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out how to cut the tie. I knew I was done. Mentally, I was done. I was more afraid of what people would think of me than what I needed to do for my mental health. Like I was afraid of right. people saying like, why are you doing that? You're meant to do that. You'll be a great this and this. And I'm like, I just was done. I had nothing left to give. And cutting ties with that wall, although I'll relate it back to soccer. When I quit soccer, it felt like that all over again, but mm-hmm. different. This time yeah. I found relief in it. It's so weird. They're same, but they're different.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, when you were in soccer and got to the point when you had to kind of, I don't feel like you were, I don't want to say forced to get out of it, but it was kind of mm-hmm. like, what do I do? I've got this decision to make. but you weren't ready, I don't think, like at that point, like you were still going through a lot that you didn't even realize you were going through.
Yeah.
And so at that point it was like, shit, I'm giving up the one thing that like I'm hanging, like that makes me feel kind of like as a child, and the one thing that makes me feel normal as a child is the soccer. I relate to that. I felt the same way about soccer. That was like my life. And then when it wasn't, it was like, okay, well, what's your life going to be now that like you're not into soccer? And that's when I started drinking and getting in trouble, and alcohol became my life. And I was like crazy for years because it shifted.
Yeah. You know, and you saying that, I think back to my early 20s, like I graduated nursing school at 23, and I did a year of not nursing school, and I rolled right into ER, or not ER nursing. So like it was a special care tele step down unit. And then I rolled right into the ER. And that time frame, because I had the stress of nursing school, I learned to kind of let go of the soccer aspect, but I was still trying to find myself. I was still trying to figure out who is Molly? What does she do? What is she expected to do? What is she expected to do with her life? That kind of thing. But once I got back into ER nursing, so like you say, your addiction at that point was alcohol. I'm pretty sure mine was nursing school and trying to survive and trying to figure out how to get there. And then once I got nursing school, I worked so much there, and then I got done and I dove right into work and training and trying to swallow up continuing education and learn as much as I could. And I wouldn't say, you know, came up, got married, became a mom, all of that in the time frame. And then when I think it was 9 years ago, actually 9 years ago this past weekend, I had my first bodybuilding competition because I dove headfirst into that too. Like, you know, and when I got there, I was so all or nothing because I would
an escape.
It was an escape. It was another way to do that. And it was something to prove to myself that I still could do it, or I could do it, because I was in my freaking 30s when I did it, my middle 30s. And
damn,
I remember my coach owned the gym that I go to, and we talked at length about it. And he hosts his own shows twice a year, April and November. And I was working out there and I saw the bodybuilders come in, and I was just like, like complete stalking them, and needed to, in my mind, I remember looking at them. I'm like, I will do that. I'm going to do that. And I told my husband, he was like, right. Yeah. I could see you doing that, but whatever. So I'm like, oh, you told me no. Like,
that's the worst thing.
Fucking watch me. Okay.
Like, right.
So I did it, and I dove in, and I remember I got my food plan, and I was all or nothing. Like I could not stray from it, and I became obsessive with it. And I honestly believe that is where I acknowledged the point that I first started having issues with food, because it was such a restrictive diet. My coach was very big on carb cycling. So I could only have big carbs on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And while I would have a bowl of oatmeal in the morning, like a half a cup, the rest of the day, there was no carbs unless it was vegetables. And it was pretty difficult to do, but because I'm so freaking type A with certain things, I did it. There were times I noticed, like I needed something. And so I remember standing in my kitchen, it was like 9 o'clock at night. I'm starving after doing two a days, because I was doing like an evolution HIIT type workout that included weightlifting and then heavyweight training on top of that. I think I was consuming 1400 calories at that point in a day. And I was hungry. And all I wanted,
I would imagine so.
Like so freaking hungry. And I remember just taking a handful of trail mix with raisins, M&Ms, peanuts, and shoving it in my mouth. And I'm like chewing it. And I'm like, oh my God, I just fucking ruined my competition. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to lose the body fat. This fucking sucks. Like, how dare I? And so it would start the abusive, like I started self-sabotaging, so to speak. So I did the show, didn't place for shit. Rightfully so, because my posing sucks. anybody that knows me, I can't walk in heels. I'm not a girly girl.
You're the same person.
I am not a girly girl. Like, I'm just not. So also during that training, I ended up tearing my extensor tendon in my right elbow. Like, I tore it clear off the bone. Had to have surgery on that after the competition was over. So then I'm like, I'm not done with this. So I did another one after I healed my elbow. I did better. And like, I was on the fence at that point. Like, my coach was on the fence. Like, do we put you in figure? Do we put you in bikini? Like, where do we go? And he goes, let's just see how you lean out. So I ended up going into bikini again. Didn't place again, but I was posing better. And I remember being on stage and I turn around to do the back pose. And you know, you got that spray tan. Everybody stinks. Nobody talks about yes. how bad everybody smells. Fucking worst BO ever. Like, the spray tan mix with the no shower, everything, everybody just reeks to high hell. And I turn around and I'm doing, like, I'm just standing there and I'm doing the bikini back pose. And my husband takes this picture and he said that, and I heard it too. Someone goes, holy shit. And it was geared at me. They were standing right behind my husband. And they said to him, they said out loud, look at her fucking back. Because my back was ripped. Like, it was not normal. Like, it was shredded. It was the most shredded piece of equipment on this person at that time. So I did, my mindset at that time was I had to continue carb cycling after the competition. I was so obsessive with it because I had worked so hard to get so lean and keep that muscle, not once, but twice. And I didn't let myself have anything for a long time. Like, I couldn't in my mind, I was failing. I wasn't gonna stay lean, and it wasn't skinny I was going after. I wanted leanness. I wanted my muscle to show. Right. Yeah. And then once I did fall off that wagon, I fell hard, but I fell hard for reasons of, cause I did all of that. And then the following 3 months, 6 months, it was within 3 to 6 months of my last show, I got hired at Flight. And so that brought on a whole other stressor, because then I was living
for sure.
away from home 3 to 4 days a week while doing my orientation, couldn't train, eating on the road, couldn't meal prep, all of that. So it started some of that weight gain. And then no one talks about how bad stress is for you. No one talks about it. And the amount of stress that I had from that culminated from the shit I had as a child, from all this stuff and not dealing with that stress. My mind told me I was handling it just fine. I was fine. There was not one thing wrong with me. And then that's when all of my, I'll call disordered eating started, and I just ate whatever the fuck I wanted. And I paid zero attention to portions. And there were times I was just, because I was weight training, when I would be able to weight train, I would have massive meals just because in my mind, that's what I could do. So right. Yeah, I didn't know how to eat after doing that show. And a lot of people don't talk about the obsession that happens with food post bodybuilding competition.
That's why they call it the post show blues. And that is like, when people talk about, you just said, no one talks about stress, like what it really does. And a lot of women don't realize that an exercise program, a personal trainer, a diet, whatever you want to call it, all of those things are added stressors. And we look at it like, and I think specifically women, men too, well, I should be doing all of these if I want to have my life together. So if you're someone who already existing has all of this stress in your life, and then you're like, but I'm not doing enough because my body is not where it needs to be, and all these other people are doing all of it, why can't I? Then you add in all of these things that are adding more stress onto stress, and no one is talking about, how about we manage the stress first? It doesn't mean that you can manage the stress and don't do any of this. It means what can you do? And sometimes it's like walking or stretching or trying to like try to trim back on dessert. Like, you don't have to go into like 100%. Let's lose all this weight and gain all this muscle and get super toned and leaned. And if I don't do any of that, I'm a failure. Like, you have to integrate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't know that. Like, I had that all or nothing mindset. And I saw myself as a failure at that point. Like, I was so lean and now I'm not. Like, what do other people think of me? And, but then I'd be like, mm-hmm. why the fuck do I care what other people think of me? Like, it's not so not me normally. But then if I look back, I always cared, because with my mom's bipolar disorder, I'll go right back there. She would talk to herself out loud in public. She had audio, like, would hear hallucinations. She would see hallucinations and she would talk this. And I always thought people were thinking bad of me and thought it was my fault. And so my mind said I didn't care what other people thought, but I did. And I think that there's that obsessive component in every single bodybuilder, whether even, I'll even say powerlifting too, that we do care mm-hmm. what others think of us, even though we have
this big bad thing
of like, I don't fucking care. Bullshit. We all do. We all do. And
we all do. We care more than the people who aren't in the gym. And that's what I learned mm-hmm. when I competed. Like, I learned that all those people that I looked up to and wanted to be like, I'm like, all of these people in here, including myself, we need validation more than anyone, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. for childhood trauma or the way you were raised, the way someone treated you in high school. Like, we are all in here staring in the mirror at ourselves, mm-hmm. trying to look the best we possibly can. Ironically, a lot of us are the most unhealthy inside,
yeah.
like from
yeah.
stuff we're putting in our body or not. And all these other people are looking at us like we're the most healthy things. We're so in shape.
Yeah.
We have our shit together. And in all reality, we're fucking not. And I remember envying the people who could give a shit about the gym. I remember secretly being like, God, I wish I could just not care like that person. Mm-hmm. But I do. Why do I desperately need this body? And mm-hmm. I don't anymore, thank God. But like, it was a really sick and twisted time of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. And honestly, you know, now I still go to the gym. I'll say, I mean, some weeks I don't go, some weeks I go three times, mm-hmm. some weeks I have the opportunity to go five times, but I'm not going because I hate my body. I'm going because
right.
it's my mental health that I'm working on.
Yes.
And I mentally am a better person. I'm a better mother. I'm a better wife. I have more confidence when I go do some physical activity. And there are
yes.
days it's not lifting. I walked, gosh, after I would say a solid 6 months, I just walked because I hated weights. All I could do was just like the thought of doing a deadlift gave me mm-hmm. chest pain. It gave me anxiety. And I remember texting you after I started with you the first time I deadlifted was starting your program. And I couldn't quite get out the amount of pride and like, fuck yeah. I went back and did a deadlift again. Was it what
I remember that
was? Was it as heavy as I could lift? No, but I'm also 10 years older and I'm also don't give a fuck. I don't have to lift that heavy anymore. Now it's just a maintenance of making sure my body is moving. That's it. That's all it is. And I feel like post bodybuilding competitions, most women, especially, just we're so damn hard on ourselves. And is it society? Is it how we were raised? I think it's all of it. And mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent now of being like, step back, take a breath, girl, like sit down, just let yourself
yep.
be, give yourself that time to just sit and stare outside, sit there mm-hmm. and enjoy the peace and the quiet. But it's in the peace and the quiet that those, when we have to deal with our thoughts. And
yep.
that's the
and
hard.
That's why a lot of us are just go, 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 go. And mm-hmm. I can look back now and you can too on when I was just nonstop. I never wanted to
yeah.
stop. I didn't want to sit with any of that.
Nope. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, not at all. So, I mean, like no. CWC, getting back to that, like I didn't know I couldn't care so much about what I was eating. And it's not the right way to say that. Excuse me. It's more so like, I'm not as stressed about what I'm eating now. If I want Doritos, I'm going to eat them. Like last night, we had planned to cook dinner, but after the games got over late, my husband and I looked at each other and were like, you want tacos? I'm like, yeah, I want fucking tacos. Mm-hmm. So we went out and got Mexican food. And I had two margaritas and I had rice and enchiladas, and I don't care. It doesn't matter. Like, it just doesn't matter as long as you're okay with it. Like, truly okay with it. Hold on, I got to cough again.
Go ahead. I get that too. And it always happens when I'm filming and I'm like, you feel it like creeping up in your throat.
It was like down here and it's like, hey. You know, and so like, thank you for like teaching me how to be okay with food. Like truly, you say it every time, food is food. Food is food. Yeah, there's healthy food. Yeah, there's not so healthy food, but food is food.
Right.
And it's all about just keeping it in moderation too. Like move your body.
And taking that pressure off of just even saying and really believing that like, okay, there is no bad food. This isn't going to make me a bad person if I eat ding dongs or Oreos.
Yeah.
And I think it's also really important. I'm going to have JJ put your transformation photos up because not only have you mentally come so far since we've been working together with the food and the stress and the way that you manage your emotions. Like, I just feel like you've come so far, but also physically, like you've made so much fucking progress. Like it is insane. And you've done it like liking the food that you're eating.
Yeah.
And you're not freaking. You're like, okay, hey, we had a baseball game and it's a late night. Let's go get tacos. You wouldn't have done that before. I wouldn't have done that 6 years ago. I'd have been like, oh my God, I can't have that. I need to get my chicken and rice meal. And like, it's just so important to, I just like, that's the message that I continuously want to just like beat into people's heads is like, you literally, I promise you don't have to be miserable to make this fucking amazing body progress or physical progress.
You know, and quite honestly, like all of this for me was 100% mental. The physical just happened because I worked on this, because I worked on myself and journaling. Dude, who would have thought how awesome that is? Like, I am not one that likes to share my feelings. I never have because I was never given the opportunity as a kid. But I've also learned like,
you never felt safe to either.
No, hell no. But I've also learned that my feelings are valid and I need to say something. Like if someone does something that bothers me, I may quiet down for a little while, but I will come back to it and be like, hey, when you did this or said this, like that hurt. Like, don't do that. Just, I wouldn't have done that 10 years ago. I wouldn't have. I would have been like, whatever, toughen up, pussy, you're fine. And so
that just sits inside and compiles. Every time you don't address something, or if you're if something truly, really it does bother you, and you just say, I'm gonna keep going, I'm fine, doesn't bother me. It literally is weird. It like stacks up and builds up. And then someone can say something random to you one day and it like everything explodes.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Yes. So, I mean, and the biggest thing I can say to your clients or your people thinking about joining your program is, what have you got to lose? Because truly, if you invest in yourself with this program, only thing you're going to get out of it is feeling better. Physically, emotionally, healing your relationship with food, healing your relationship with yourself, learning to create boundaries and step away from those toxic people that you didn't realize were fucking toxic and causing you so much stress. The program works. The program works if you put yourself into it. And there's no bullshitting with it. Like you have to be honest with yourself. There's no one else judging you. You're not judging. But, and it was so different when I joined with you, like, coaches, as you, they're the bodybuilding coaches have one goal to achieve a specific aesthetic look. That's not you. You're not a bodybuilding coach. No. Could you be, have you? I don't know, but yes, you could be. Your coaching approach is more on healing the whole person. And with that, with learning how to deal with your stress, learning how to manage your food, learn and not manage, but learning how to eat, learning how to manage how you react to things and sitting with it and sitting and asking yourself, am I overreacting or does this truly affect me? And if it does affect me, why? Then vocalizing that. Who knew standing outside my front yard with bare feet brought me peace? Who knew? Like, all of the shit that you have in your program is legit. Let's talk about hormones. Hormones for women, perimenopausal women. Ladies, get your hormones checked. Don't suffer through menopause. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Don't be like your mother. Freaking find someone. Spend the money because it's going to save your life in the long run. It's going to.
I've never been more like hopeful. I just remember growing up and being so scared of like, oh, menopause. Like, I remember that's all my mom talked about when she started, how horrible it was and the night sweats and the hot flashes and, oh, just wait. And then I'm like, I grew up my whole life being just like, what do I have to look forward to? Because I'm going to hit fucking menopause and my life will be over according to my mom. Right. And now that I'm like, oh my God, no, I am already ahead of the game. I've got my hormones under control. I'm managing them. I will probably be on bioidenticals for the rest of my life. And I'm fucking fine with that. If that is going to help me through menopause, like, why not? Like it's available. And I feel like it's, you know, we just don't, it's not talked about enough.
No, it's not. I mean, let's be real. It's not just helping you through menopause. Like it's helping your kids and Josh too.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Everyone's benefiting.
Can we talk about the benefits of progesterone and how much like my life improved when I was started on that? Like I didn't want to kill people then. Like I legit like didn't hate people. I mean, yes, ladies, men too, like get your hormones checked, get them checked. It will benefit yourself, your partnerships, your relationships with your children. Trust me, I'm living proof. Caroline's living proof. If what you're doing isn't working, there's an underlying cause with it. There's such an underlying cause. And I wish more people would go and work on this. And I wish mainstream healthcare would work on this. And why they don't, blows my mind.
I mean, and you know a lot more about, you know, the healthcare than I do because you're in it. I just see it so differently now. After the breast implant illness, like it changed the way that I view our entire system as a whole. It's just, it's so broken and it's so scary broken. And it's very scary.
So broken. I wish our society wasn't looking for the next quick fix. Because truly, I do believe that there is benefit in prolonging your life and improving your life and controlling your stress, fixing hormone issues. And it's going to take tweaks. I'm not on the same hormone medication I was when I started hormone replacement therapy. But I tell you what, I feel 1,000 times better than I did beforehand. I mean, I was on 7 different prescription medications. 7. I take progesterone, testosterone cream, and my thyroid medication now. 3.
And that's 3. It. Wow. 3.
Yeah. 3. And I feel way better. So much better.
Well, and I feel like I want to say one more thing about something you just said about like not looking for the quick fix. And I feel like I hope that this reaches the right audience. Just want to super, super quick insert the Ozempic thing. I have a lot of people have been asking me lately with what you do. Like, do you even want to talk about it? I'm like, I have clients who are on it and they're doing great. Here's what I'll say. The same thing when I did the Anavar video on TikTok, I got a message again this morning from a girl who was like, where can I get Anavar? And what do you suggest I start on? I was like, did you watch my video? I am not recommending this. I don't recommend that you take it at all. Go get your hormones checked first. So if you're watching this and you're thinking, damn, I've heard all these great things about Ozempic, even Caroline said that it can work great. If, and this is a big if you've like done everything down here, as far as I've been working with a hormone specialist, we know where all my levels are at. We've got them balanced. I feel great. I'm just really still kind of struggling to lose weight and we haven't figured out why. stress, all of those things that we talked about, stress, sleep. If you're kind of still just like beating your head against a wall and nothing is happening, then maybe talk to your doctor about getting on it and trying it. But I feel like everyone now, there's a lot of people who are jumping to that because they see it's working. The people that you see, celebrities, all these people, they've already probably, I don't know, I'm assuming if you're a celebrity, you've had your hormones checked because I don't know. Right. So they're taking it. Maybe they haven't. Don't jump to that when, yeah, you'll probably lose weight. But then when you get off of it, if you still have something else going on, you're still going to have to address that. So like, that is where you need to start. You need to start with the hormones, see where everything's at, get the basic CBC, see where your vitamin levels, minerals, all that shit is at first. Like you have to kind of go through that hierarchy. I think that like what you said, we're so quick to just jump. This is the new thing and damn, it's working. Like it changes the way your body processes fucking sugar. Like I get it, but don't jump to that.
Yeah. You know, and back to, yes, agreed with that. And I'm going to kind of piggyback off of this. Back to the hormone testing. If you get your hormone tested and things are off, it's not necessarily going to be an instant fix when they start replacing hormone therapy. It is going to take time because it's going to take time to figure out where you feel you're best at. I would say it took me a solid year, 1 year to feel 100%. But I was also very patient and I have a great practitioner that was telling me, be patient with me. We're going to get you there. Back to the Ozempic. Great drug, works great for the quick weight loss. What happens when you're done? What happens when you're off of it? My question is, are they giving education? Are they teaching you how to eat effectively to maintain this? Are they dealing with the things that caused you to become obese in the beginning? Because many obesity is caused in different ways for different people, whether it be trying to shut the voices in your head to deal with trauma, you have a medical condition, whatever, but is that any of that being addressed? And that's where my questions lie. And, you know, what are the long-term effects of being on this medication? What happens 20 years down the road, right? I mean, yeah, get the weight off quick because it is benefiting your heart health in that aspect. However, we know that right now it's doing that. 20 years from now, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Are your kidneys going to fail? Is your liver going to fail? Like, we just don't know. But we do know food and diet and learning how to eat appropriately does affect so many things in our life. And healthcare is broken. It's so broken.
Yeah.
And it was really discovered. I think most people figured it out with the pandemic, but
yes.
You guys, if you want anything to work in life, you have to deal with the root cause. The root cause is what's going to cure whatever it is that ails you. When you look that root cause in it, no matter how fucking scary it is, what I can tell you is that after you walk through that darkness of looking at that root cause, life is fucking amazing. Life is great. You have to go through the darkness, looking at it, unpacking all of that shit to be successful. Period.
Mm-hmm. You can't go around it. Like you and I both tried to do with our quick fix of like bodybuilding because our bodies, and we both avoided that. And then we came and it smacked us both right back in the face whenever that was over. And only now I feel like we can both sit here and say that, like, I feel a million times better about my body now than I did when I was bodybuilding. And
absolutely,
it looks nothing like it did before. But I enjoy the way I am as a person and a human now way better than back then.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And no matter how dark your dark place is, there is light at the end of it. You just have to one foot in front of the other, work through it. One foot in front of the other. It is possible to work through it. It is possible to get to the other side. And I know you're going to be waiting on the other side being like, welcome. Hell yeah. Here you are. I'm so excited for you. And a lot of women need that. A lot of men need that right now.
Yes. And
I'll be on that other side for you too. Like, I am the first one that's like, hell yes. Great job. You did that. Like, we don't do that enough for each other. We don't. Life's hard.
And for people who may be sitting there and thinking like, yeah, but my dark place is way darker. We all think that. And what I have really come to understand or realize the most, even just with coaching, is that we all are so similar in our struggles and the way we were brought up. And I think that that is where I have found the most comfort, is realizing even just with my OCD and my ADHD and all this, like, I'm like, there's so many other people who have the same exact things that I, these thoughts that I have, and then it makes them not so scary. I'm like, right. There's other people that struggle with this. And I remember even not wanting to hire a therapist for my OCD, because I was like, I'm not able to be helped. I've had 5 therapists. And one of my friends who is a licensed therapist was like, Caroline, there's people who have way worse OCD than you. I promise. Like, she's like, way worse. People who have to be put on like watch for like, they don't know what they're going to do with their thoughts. She's like, you're not to that level. You can be helped. I promise. So it's like, just knowing that like, we all have that darkness that we have to go through, and you're not alone.
No, you're definitely not alone. And I know it feels scary, and I know it does. Like, there's some dark places in this world, and you said it, it's just a matter of like, our minds manifest, have the tendency to manifest our situation as being the worst ever. I promise you it's not.
Yes.
There's always something that could be worse. Always.
Yep.
And yeah. So push through, take time when you need it. When you're not ready to push through, sit there where you are, stand there, toes to the line, and just look at it and find the strength within yourself. You can find the strength within yourself to take that next step. And it's only one step at a time. Not everybody's journey is going to heal as quick as the next person. Some people it takes years. Some people it takes decades, but it's possible. I fully believe.
And there's some who don't ever change and heal because they don't want to look at it. And I think just stopping, like you said earlier, just like you were like, I never even stopped. Like, but the journaling, like the whole point of that, the whole point of journaling, it sounds so cheesy, is you're stopping and you're making yourself literally think about that shit you've been avoiding by go, grounding. You're stopping. You're not out. Well, maybe some people are outside scrolling. When I ground, I'm not, I don't have my phone. I'm out grounding. Yeah. And it is like so relaxing and centering. You're stopping yourself and looking at all that. How am I feeling right now? We don't think about that ever, how we feel. So many people. It's interesting.
You know, with the grounding thing, what it brings me back to is being a little kid when you were outside playing in bare feet and nothing fucking mattered. Nothing. It just felt good to
and
be
like
playing
looking
in the
up
mud.
At the sky, like I'm so small, and like none of the shit that I was just stressing about in my house 10 minutes ago fucking matters. It really doesn't. Right. Like it's
no, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. And you know, the grounding is my favorite thing to do. I'm not a huge fan of journaling. As you know, I don't really do it unless something is truly like stuck inside of me and I know I need to push through and work through it. Then I will journal.
But you figured that out. Like, you'll journal when you know you need to do it. It's not something that you're going to like force yourself to do every single day. You do it when you need it, and you've made it work.
Right. I have. I've made the whole program freaking work. Like, two kids in travel ball. Two kids in travel ball, a husband that works 24-hour shifts. I still made this program work. I figured out how to pack my snacks for the day. I figured out how to do all this stuff. It can happen, you guys. I was the biggest excuse maker. And in all honesty, it was only hurting myself. It really was. It was just me. I was just hurting myself in the end. But I promise you, like, sign up with Caroline. It's so worth it. It's so worth it. Her coaches are amazing. Dana's amazing. The food, you literally get to eat pretty much whatever you want. Like, you learn how to make things in a certain way, a new healthy way. Yeah, it's so worth it.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I'm proud of me.
You should be.
And I'm thankful for you. And I'm thankful for Dana. You were exactly what I needed in the right moment. And I'm really, truly glad and thankful to Michelle for tagging you in those photos, because I never found you otherwise. But I feel like the universe has a funny way of putting people in our path when we need them most. And
I agree.
You were who I needed in that moment. So
thank you. I'm so happy. You're just the best. This was such this was so much fun. I could go on for like another hour. Easily.
Same. Like, I feel like we'll talk all the things I want to do.
I know. Maybe we'll do a part two and we'll just talk about like whatever. We can talk about whatever.
Sure. Yeah. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Perfect.
By the way, Body by Caroline 5, I started today. Mm-hmm. My butt was hurting by the time I left the gym. Like,
when you get to 5 through 8 is like a whole different game.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm going to be sending you text messages, probably flipping you the bird. I'm like, fuck you, Caroline.
I love when you do that. Those are my fucking favorite. When you're like, by the way, I did the inchworms and I hate you.
Fuck you and your inchworms. Yeah. I'm glad you know that I'm completely kidding, because in my dark sadistic mind, like, I truly do love them, because there's a sense of pride in myself. Like, a year ago, I couldn't do them. I know that I couldn't do them a year ago.
Those are fucking hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They are. Yeah. Yeah. So, Caroline, keep being amazing. Keep doing great things.
You do the same.
Thanks. Thanks. I appreciate you and all you do.
I am so happy that we got to do this today, and it will air on Friday at 7 a.m. Okay. So I'll send you, whenever I get all the stuff from JJ, I'll forward the email to you. That way, like, if you want to download the little clips and excerpts, you can post them or I can just tag you or whatever.
Sure. I'm going to show you my shirt real quick, because it's one of my favorite.
Yes. Let me see it. I was going to ask you if that's what it said, because I could see the UR.
Mm-hmm. It's a UR enough. It is made by Till Valhalla Project. They are a veteran-owned company that you can find on Facebook. And so it brings awareness to veteran suicide, first responder suicide, all of that. And all of that is near and dear to my heart. You know, like, being a first responder, because I was for 5 years, being a first responder, it's hard. There's hard, and there's a lot of darkness that comes with that, and there's no mental health.
No support. My dad was a veteran in Vietnam, and the VA is like, I don't want to say it's a joke. I just feel like the whole system.
It's a joke.
It is. It expands beyond healthcare being a joke to, like, what we don't do shit for our veterans. Like, the stuff I can't even sit here and pretend to know what it would be like to be a first responder, a veteran. I don't even know what the fuck I would do if I saw some of that shit. So we need that. To be better about that.
I agree. And I will tell you, like, my last day of working flight, I wrote an email to the three, our medical director, our educator, and then our medical crew coordinator. I think that was her title. And I told them, like, in this email, I spelled out the fact of why I was leaving specifically. And I told them, none of your flight crew is okay. We see the deepest and darkest. We see people on their worst days, their worst tragedies, the worst things you could ever imagine. And we're expected to go on to the next one. You don't ever get over that. And there's certain things, like, I will say, like, the worst thing to ask anyone, veteran, first responder, police, fire, military, nurses, healthcare providers, what's the worst thing you've seen? Tell me about that. Don't fucking ask that to people. Don't.
No.
Don't. My response to that when people ask me that is, you can't handle it. You can't.
No. Yeah, that's morbid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, don't make me relive one of the worst days of my life.
No.
Because it wasn't my worst day, but it was worse for that people, and all of the things, all of that come right back with it. So, but, like, you know, there's not enough done for that. There's just not.
No.
So this is, again, like, it gets back to your program coming into my life at the right time. Like, there's been some thoughts that have been there, you know, like, gosh, this would just be so easy if this didn't happen, or this. And,
right.
You know, my husband and I have a very unique bond. We have a very unique marriage because we're both first responders. We're both in that. And so we're able to talk about that shit with each other. No one else gets it. And we both read each other to the point where we know we need space before we can talk about it. But we usually almost always talk about it with each other. And
that's good.
It is because you have to get this out somehow. And I think that's why I left flight, is like, dealing with all the childhood trauma, 16 years of ER nursing, 5 years of seeing people on their absolute worst day of their fucking life. I was done. I was toast.
Handle so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, Till Valhalla, I'll send you the name. It's the No Hero Left Behind Till Valhalla Project. They sell cool
shirts. And I'll put the link in the show notes too.
Mm-hmm. So people, you are enough. That's all.
Yes. I love that. All right. Well, you go have a wonderful rest of your day. And I'm
thank sure you. You too. To you
today.
Sounds good. All right. Talk to you all later. Right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for checking out the CWC podcast. If you want to learn more about our community, make sure to check out the show notes.